Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Mark Salem. And someone sitting next to me, you want to wake up, say your name?
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm good. How's everything going on your end of the world?
Real good.
This is my son, Alan, and we're here to answer your questions. The disclaimers that they play in front of and after the show says it doesn't represent the management, all that kind of stuff. Well, that's true, but this is not an advertisement for anything. We're here to talk about car repair. We're here to help guide you, and that's our only motivation. You can certainly go to any shop you want, and we say at the very beginning, if you have a shop that you really love and they take good care of you, there is no reason for you to change. On the other hand, if you don't have a shop, then we have a couple listed that you can go to, and I want to tell you now, and I'll tell you for the rest of my life, I don't make a dime off of your visit. I don't make any bird dog fee. I don't make any commission. I don't make anything at all if you visit one of my shops. And all that information is available at marksalem.com. And you can also leave me an email at marksalem.com. Or you can remember my email address at mark@marksalem.com. So I saw a motorhome in your bay the other day. What are you doing to that?
We've got a big motorhome in there, big diesel pusher that we're putting some supplemental airbags, some towing airbags on the back of this thing. Evidently, this guy tows a big race trailer and wanted some supplemental airbags. He did all of his research. He found the best one, and so we're installing it for you, installing it for him. Pretty big project. Pretty neat thing. Pretty sophisticated. Got a lot of bells and whistles, and it's a pretty nice install.
Okay, so is the trailer tongue weight so great that the airbags that presently exist on this are incapable of keeping the coach level?
There is no airbags on it right now. It is just a leaf sprung rear end.
Oh, all right. So the tongue weight's got to be something. His headlights are up in the air. How big is this motorhome? How long is it?
I think it's 34 foot, and it's one of those ones that's got the semi-truck front end with the
box on the back.
Box on the back, yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of like we call it a big class B, because A is the square box.
Yep.
And the B usually has the van nose or the big truck nose.
And it's actually a Gulfstream Supernova.
Okay.
I learned about those this week.
So the idea is that the rear leaf springs are obviously squat in the back because of the trailer.
Yep.
He's going to put airbags in there, and these big, huge airbags are going to keep the back end level.
Correct.
Is there a leveling switch in this kit?
There is it's an automatic auto ride leveler, so it reads. It's got a stick between the suspension and the frame, and as it comes together, it adds air all automatically.
Okay. So it's got switches that says if you put 10 guys on the rear bumper and you drop the rear bumper down, then the airbags will inflate and bring the bumper back up to where it was.
Correct. Yep.
And you've got enough guys working for you that you could have all them guys stand on the rear bumper.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And just do that. Now, so that means this diesel, are you going to use the air that comes from the diesel to fire up these bags?
It's got its own compressor, and it's got its own generating station, period, for this one.
Okay, so it's completely separate than the brake system and the air system on the diesel.
Correct, yeah.
And he did all of his own homework. So if it works, good for him. And if it doesn't work, what happens to you?
Nothing. I told him, this is not my area of expertise. I said, you find me the best one. You do all the research, and you ship me the one that you want, and then we'll install it. Because that's one of those things that I would rather the customer do the research than me do the research and them not be happy.
But then we can follow up, though, on the backside of this. And in 6 months, you can follow up with him. And how did you do, and what is it lacking, and what lessons can we learn from this? So if the question comes back up again, we can do that.
Certainly. One thing that's kind of interesting, did you see that motorhome out there?
No.
Oh, it's a big, huge diesel pusher semi-truck. That thing's got a Ford 6.0 in it.
A V8 6-liter Ford diesel engine.
Yeah, the one with all the problems. It's got a 6-liter Ford pushing that gigantic monster motorhome.
How did it do?
I have no idea. I just drove it in. But
Can we lift that thing in the air?
You know, he's got the back end lifted. I believe he said we could lift the front and the back. I don't think he needed to lift the back. So, okay. Or the front.
I think we can do better than 30,000, so I'm pretty sure he can lift that thing because I don't think the gross vehicle weight of that is 30,000.
I think the length is more of the issue, not the weight. I think the axle, between the two axles, the wheelbase, but we didn't need to. So he just lifted up the back. He just got the back there.
So he has to mount the air compressor. He has to mount the air tank. He has to mount the lever of the switch that's going to add or subtract air to keep the bumper at a particular height.
Yeah, and that came on a big square 2x2, all pre-wired. So basically, you hook up power and ground and an air hose, and you're done. You just got to mount this tray. Real nice setup. Real big. Sophisticated compressor and all this kind of stuff I'd never even seen before. And you just basically mount it and plug in your power and you're done.
Okay. So, but you have to somehow bring a power supply to this.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Okay. You've got to run power and your grounds and you hook up your air lines and the warning lights and stuff. Sure.
And welding?
There's some welding on the mounting plates for the airbag system, correct.
Okay. So, compressor, tank, wiring, the tray that has all that stuff on it, then the two airbags.
The airbags are actually mounted on a huge cradle that was already pre-assembled. So it's got this big, I mean, it came in a box that was 2x2x4 feet long, and the thing probably weighed 300 or 400 pounds, came on a forklift, and so it was already basically prefab. We just get it up there and twist it in.
All right, is it a bolt-in or weld-in?
It's both. You bolt it in and with the optional welding, and we chose to weld it as well.
Okay, yeah. All right, good deal. Well, I've been working cows and working up north for the last 2 or 3 weeks, and it was sure tough for me to come home to this.
I can imagine. I've been watching. I have it on my phone where it shows me weather down here and weather up there, and, man, it's
51 degrees this morning. I woke up this morning, went out at 5 o'clock to feed the horses, and it was almost jacket weather. And I walk over by the barn, and I had stuck a bunch of horse halters in a 5-gallon bucket with some soap.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were all grungy. So I set them in there, and then I hosed them off last night, and I went back in the house, and I forgot to turn the hose off.
Oh, boy.
So I was lucky because I didn't have it on full blast. But so this morning I woke up, and the entire garden and pasture, too, is flooded because I watered the heck out of it last night. So anyway, and the horses are walking around, and they're ankle-deep in mud, but it's okay. It's okay. All righty, 602-508-0960. If you have any car questions, we can talk diesels. We can talk fabrication of some stuff. We can talk motorhomes. We can talk. I got an estimate on some repair work the other day. I had a guy call me the other day, Alan, and he says, I took my girlfriend's car in to a particular chain store, and he says, and I got what I consider to be an unusual brake repair estimate.
Okay.
And I said, say no more. And he goes, why? I haven't told you the rest of the story. I says, I'm not interested in the rest of the story. He's a friend of mine, so I can talk to him this way. And he says, well, so tell me what you're thinking. And I says, well, I know that it has brake pads and rotors and calipers and hardware kits, and I know your estimate's between $700 and $900. And then he used some really bad words that I've never heard before.
Oh, boy.
He called me names. But he didn't hang up on me. And he says, how do you know that? And I says, that's just the way it is. It's everything. Now, let's look at both sides of that issue. This is their side. Their side is don't you want your brakes to work as well as they did when you bought your car new?
Right.
Don't you think that your brakes, it's important for your brakes to work as best they can, so therefore it's important that I replace all the components that can possibly wear out.
Okay.
Fair enough. What's the other side of the coin?
The other side of the coin is they're not bad.
Well, that's beside the point. What's not bad?
Well, the calipers aren't bad. I mean, I'm assuming they're not bad. The calipers aren't bad. The rotors have cuts on them.
The rotors still have plenty of metal that you can resurface the rotors.
Correct.
And that's really the bulk of the issue is that one side says we're going to put your car back the way it was brand new, and let's put it in terms that people perhaps could understand a little bit better. Your shoes,
okay?
when you wear your shoes, you just kind of look at the soles, and once the traction part goes to smooth, you replace them. Right,
right.
But until then, it doesn't really do you much good.
It's like breaking a lace and replacing the shoe.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You just need a lace, as long as everything else is in a good state.
So anyway, folks, the ballpark figure for an axle, it's a front axle or back axle, on most cars today, is somewhere in the vicinity of $250. $250 will buy you a brake job. Now, the rotors have a minimum thickness, and let's just use some big numbers to help you understand. The minimum thickness on your rotor might be 1 inch, and really you have 1.25 inches of metal on there. We have plenty of room at 1.25 inches to machine both sides and make that record player smooth on both sides. We want it to be really, really nice because we want the very flat pad, the new pad, to hit a very flat surface so we have 100% contact. If we leave the rotor unturned, then I want you to think that the rotor looks like a saw blade. So when you put a flat pad against the saw blade, the only top portion of the pad that's going to touch the saw blade is the tips of the saw blade.
Correct.
So when you look at it from that point of view, now, there are times that a technician may not decide to cut the rotors because, A, they're flat already, and, B, he doesn't see a real benefit for the customer. And years ago, we had to cut every rotor, but today, some of the car manufacturers and brake people are saying, no, it's not that. Look it over better, you guys, but there's some of the rotors that don't need to be cut. Now, we have expensive equipment that allows us to check to see if the brake pedal is going to vibrate when you apply the brake at 60 miles an hour. We have very sophisticated measuring devices to tell you whether or not there's enough metal that we can shave off of this rotor. And when we're talking about metal, let me give you an example. If I shave a rotor by 3/1000ths, that's the thickness of a hair. That's the thickness of a human hair is 3/1000ths of an inch. So if I take a finished cut on both sides of the rotor, I'm taking 3 on one side, 3 on the other, it's 6/1000ths. So we're talking small amount of money. But here's what bothers me the most is, most of the times on the back of the rotor, it says minimum thickness is 1 inch or something like
right,
that.
Right, right.
Those guys are condemning rotors, and you don't ever see them measuring the rotor, and you don't ever see them take the rotor off to find out what the minimum is.
Right.
Because they have different minimums. So just beware, that's all. Just beware. And for $700 to $900, it's a good idea to go get another estimate.
Yeah.
Take it someplace else and have them give me an estimate, and always ask for a detailed estimate. I want to specifically know the parts, the labor, the shop supply, the environmental charges, and the sales tax.
Itemized, yeah.
Specific, itemized, detailed estimate. Because you can't bid it otherwise. Otherwise, it's just nothing. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. Mark Salem, Alan Salem here at your service. The two of us have different skill sets. I'm a lot smarter than Alan, but he has tire skill sets that I don't have. Tires, wheels, aftermarket stuff, big tires, little tires, gear ratios, modifications. His business, the performance side, is a modification kind of business where they make dreams come true. And I've even seen you put twin turbos on a Corvette.
Sure.
And blower on my Camaro,
yep.
On my new Camaro. They
yep.
put a supercharger on it, and they made me happy with the programming of the computer, which is the area I was most concerned about. But let me tell you about transmissions. Quality Transmission in Tempe is a place that I regularly suggest that you go to if you have a problem when it comes to transmission problems. The idea is the transmission guy needs to drive it and talk to you about the symptoms, because that's the way you're going to get your car repaired properly. They tell me at Quality Transmission that only one out of every 4 or 5 cars actually needs an overhaul, and most of those are brought in on a tow truck because they won't move. So it is important for you to find a transmission shop that you can trust, and it's important for you to not let them take it apart before they give you a firm estimate. Otherwise, once they get it apart, that $1,200 bill is going to go to $3,000 in a heartbeat, and you can't take it out of there because no one's going to take it in a basket. Quality Transmission is located on McClintock North of University in Tempe. Bob and Steve, good guys, honest guys, and trust me when I tell you, they've got your interest in front of their own. Okay, let's go talk to Olaf. Olaf, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mark. See, I have a 2008 Toyota Camry, and it has the tire pressure monitoring system. Could you tell me in layman terms how that works, what the pros and cons, what does the vehicle have to be moving for the system to work? What happens if I increase the air pressure by 3 to 5 pounds per tire?
Okay, too many questions. You hang on to those questions.
Okay.
You're shaking your head.
Yeah,
does it have to be moving?
Okay.
Hold on, I'm going to ask your questions, Olaf.
Yes, if you're resetting the sensors, they have to be moving in order for them to be recognized.
Okay, but he's not resetting them. So he gets in the morning and he turns the key on. And is the tire pressure monitor systems awake and available?
Correct, yes.
No questions. Are you going to hang your head on this?
Yes, sir. Okay. No questions.
All right. And then the second thing is that how does it work?
It works by every car is just a little bit different. That's what drives us to pull our hair out. But I know this because Andy has that car or a car just like that. But most of the time they work with a sensor mounted on the wheel inside the tire, and it reads pressure. Some of them turn on by different parameters. For example, GM, they want to see the pressure that's on the door, on the door frame there.
Let's say it's on the sticker, it says 30 pounds.
30 pounds. They want to see 30 pounds plus or minus 7 pounds. So at 37, you're okay. At 23, you're okay. At 22, the light comes on. At 38, the light comes on.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And the sensor inside is either going to be placed on the inside of the wheel, or it's going to be on the back side of the valve stem.
Those
are the two common places.
Correct.
Okay. The sensor somehow magically simply determines what the pressure is inside the tire.
Correct.
And they're pretty doggone reliable.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. And when they go bad, it's just that the tire pressure monitoring system, TPMS, it just says that that tire is flat. And it calls up a problem with that tire.
Sometimes it just reads dashes. Sometimes it'll read 150 pounds. Sometimes it'll read 3 pounds when you know it's full. There's a multitude of different ways they go bad.
Okay.
The other thing I was going to say, too, some other cars, they don't care what the pressure is, but what they want to see is they want to see a 10% window between all of the tires. So let's say you decide to run your 08 Camry at 40 PSI. If one tire is at 45 and the rest are at 40, it's going to trigger that light because it's overflated. Or if one is 35 and the others are at 40, it's going to kick one on because it's not within 10% range. So they work in a multitude of different ways.
And all the cars have it. Now, Andy, he alludes to Andy having this kind of car. Andy is my daughter and his sister, Alan's sister. And Andy has some high-performance tires and wheels on her cars.
Correct.
What size are those?
20-inch.
And so you had to completely reprogram all that.
On her car, we weren't able to reprogram, but yes, we do a formula,
right?
And we go in there and we figure out what the tires. With her car, because it has the 10% window, I can set the tire pressure to whatever our formula says, and be okay.
Okay, and our formula he talks about is we have a mathematical computer system that allows us to redo the door sticker on the cars that we change the tires and wheels from. So like on my truck, Dodge, we went from 17-inch tires to 20-inch tires.
Correct.
And when we did, we had to change all the inflation values. And so then we're going to reprogram some cars you can reprogram the window.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can move the window, like Alan said, 7 up and 7 down, that's a 14-pound window.
Correct.
You can move the window down 5 degrees or 5 pounds or up 5 pounds. You can move it around on some cars, but not all cars.
Right.
How many of the trucks do you move around? Can you do the new Chevys?
Not the 15s. All the HDs up to 15 we can do.
Okay.
The 1500s up to 13 we can do. We can't.
How about Dodge?
No, we can't do Dodge yet.
Okay.
But we can do Ford now.
Okay.
And
you can change the parameters.
Yes, correct.
You can go in and move it around.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So the TPMS is a really nifty thing, and it is the problem with it is that the computer has to know that the purple. I'm going to use this simplistic way.
Yeah.
The purple one's the right front.
Yeah.
And the red one is the left rear.
Right.
If somebody rotates the tires around and doesn't tell the computer that we've rotated the tires, then the computer's going to see the red one, and it's going to say, "Hey, your left rear is low." But you're going to check your left rear, but it's really the yellow one, and the red one is now on the left front. So when you have a tire pressure system problem and it says that this tire is 5-10 pounds less than all the rest of them, You have to check all four tires,
yeah,
because it could be something problem.
We have some of the funniest things we have is we have customers come in and it'll say left front tires down to 23 pounds. So they'll add tire or air to the left front. Well, they'll get back in, and 2 days later, it's still on. So then they'll add 10 more pounds. Then they'll add 10 more pounds. Then well, really, they're working on the left front, but the problem is in the left rear. So they'll come in and go, I cannot get this thing to shut off. And we'll check a tire that's supposed to have 30 pounds, and it'll have 87 pounds. And we'll run like there was a grenade just thrown in camp, and going, whoa, the left front's at 17 pounds, or the left rear's at 17 pounds, and the left front's at 87, and that is scary. And that happens a lot more than you think. Holy cow.
No, I'm going to ask you a question. Men or women?
You know, it happens both ways, to be real honest with you.
Is there a predominant sex that involves in that?
It usually happens more with women, but...
All right. I was. Look at me. I'm trying to give you a hint here. Say men.
Men. It's the path of least resistance. It happens all the time with men.
It's the leather loafer silk socks, yep, guys. Especially the guy that walks into the lobby and he announces to everybody, because it's full of ladies, he announces to everybody that he rebuilt his engine, when he was 16 years old.
Yep.
16
yep.
years old. That's the guy I want as a customer.
Right.
He's the one that always gets the same answer. You know what? You're telling me how to fix your car, and you've diagnosed it, but when it doesn't fix your car, you're going to want me to pay for your bad diagnosis. So I'm booked now for the next 4 years. You're going to have to find another shop.
Right.
And typically, he's an engineer. And I'm not talking about an engineer that runs the locomotive for the Union Pacific Railroad either. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been providing expert auto and truck and light repair maintenance services to the customers of Mesa since 1970. ASC certified technicians, highest level of automotive service, and they follow up with friendly reminders to let you know when your car is due for service. It's never been easier or more convenient to keep your car and truck in top-notch shape if you would deal with Thompson's Auto Repair, which is located at Main Street just east of Stapley. That's Thompson's Auto Repair, Main Street just east of Stapley. We're going to come back in just a few minutes. Ron, you're our first caller, I promise, and I'm sorry I didn't get you in this break, but if you'll hang on. But we have four lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And when it comes to car repair, I'll tell you something that I have a comment on my truck a lot. Because you put those real aggressive tires on my truck, everybody says, oh, I bet it howls like crazy.
Yep, we hear that a lot.
But it doesn't.
No, it's quiet.
It has absolutely no noise, and no one will believe me.
They've come a long way, and that tire that you've got on there right now is ultra quiet.
And it's surprisingly quiet, and I actually took a guy for a ride Saturday night because he says, there's no way it can't be. I said, okay, come on. We happened to be in Pine or Strawberry, I don't even know where we were at, and we were coming down the road, and I was doing 55, 60 miles an hour, and we rolled down all the windows.
Yeah.
And I could hear other cars louder than me.
No question.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark and Alan here at your service. We have different skill sets. I'm an ASE Master Tech, and he actually has a performance business that does lots of lifting and lowering, and he focuses on diesels, plus he does major diesel engine repair work. And so we actually have two different skill sets. But like we promised, we're going to Ron first. Ron, thank you for holding as long as you did. What can I do for you?
I got a 2006 GMC diesel 3/4 ton.
Okay.
And it's got about 96,000 on it. And the last 6 weeks or 8 weeks, it's been throwing a message on the dasher where the odometer is that it says low coolant. But I'm looking at my gauge, and it never even gets above. I don't do much driving right now, so I'm just around town a lot, and I just wanted to know if there was something wrong. The gauge never gets over 210.
All right, I can fix it. Is it worth $2 to you?
You bet.
Okay. All right. So the next time the plate comes by, or next time there's a donation, you add $2 to your donation. I don't care.
You bet. Okay. You bet I will.
Alan, tell him about
it. It's actually easy, and that's a very, very common problem on the Duramax is the little float chingaderas there in your coolant overflow jug is hanging up. It is either bad or hanging up. What we typically do is it's very sophisticated what we do. We usually hit it with a screwdriver, and that usually loosens it up temporarily.
You know, I can do that.
Yeah. Keep the light on. Make sure that the coolant's full, and then hit that thing a couple good times with the screwdriver in. And
hit the outside of the can?
Yeah, the outside of the can with the handle of the all screwdriver, right. And that will usually loosen up the float. If I'm not mistaken, you have to replace the jug and the float as one assembly. I could be wrong, but I think you got to replace the whole thing.
I got a better idea.
Okay.
All right. Let's suck out. Go get your wife's turkey baster and suck all the coolant out of the jug.
Okay.
And then take the hose off the bottom and take the jug out. Then
squirt
it with some Dawn liquid, soap in it, and put a little water in it, hot water, and just shake the heck out of it. And shake, and clean. And then, after you're done, rinse it out really good, and then kind of take the tank in your hand and turn it left and turn it right and watch the float go up and down.
Right.
And once you do all of that, then you put it all back together, put the coolant back in it, tell your wife that the turkey baster got ate by the dogs, throw it away, and you're home free.
I don't think you can see the float in that one, and I think that's part of the reason why
it
can't
be. But he could be able to hear it if he's got the tank out and he's shaking it.
Yeah, I don't. Okay. But anyway, that's your problem.
Okay. I just wanted to add to it, my son got drawn for deer way over in, elk way over in Unit 27 over by New Mexico, and we're going to go together. And I thought maybe I should just go take it in and have the whole, I've never had hoses, do they have a thermostat anymore?
They have two.
Yeah.
Two thermostats. I've never had any of that checked, and I thought maybe I should just take it in and have it checked.
How many miles again?
96.
About 96,000.
All right, I have a suggestion for you. If we're on the tail end of the summertime.
Right.
So if I were you, I'd plan for this thing. But, you know, it wouldn't hurt for you to go get an upper and a lower radiator hose. If you're capable of changing them, go buy an upper and lower radiator hose of a name brand. Put them in your truck. Take them with you. Okay?
Yeah.
But
okay.
If I were you, April, May of next year, I'd have the hoses done. I'd have the coolant done all at the same time. You've already made it through the rough part of the summer.
Yeah.
And if you're going to go to New Mexico, you sure as heck aren't going to run into 104-degree temperatures there.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, it's a winter hunt, so we're bearing for a full weather.
Yeah, so you're home free. So you can either wait, or if that just gets a hold of you and you feel better, then go ahead and have it done now.
I'd be willing to bet the hoses are fine.
I would too. Yeah.
They last longer than you think.
And when I sold my truck at 105,000 miles on it, it still had, I think we had done the upper hose. Oh, we had done the lower hose because we had to pull the lower hose off. And I said, hey, just put one on because you're going to charge me the labor anyway. But it's up 6 1/2 days there. Okay, I got to run. Thank you very much, Ed. Thank you very much. Larry Harker's auto is over at 38th Avenue in Indian School. He's been there a very long time, since 1967. He's a trusted name for auto repair, fast, affordable services, auto electric, brake, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance. They handle all areas of auto repairs on both foreign and domestic cars. So you can contact them today to get your car running or have it checked out. One way or another, if you're anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, for at least a 5-mile circle, there's no finer shop there in that area. And actually, I'll even open up that area bigger. Camelback south to the 10, the 101 on the west, and the I-17 to the east. That's the area that Larry Harker holds down. So if you're in that area, then trust me when I tell you, they've been around a long time, and they're really, really good people, and they know what they're doing, and they're not going to guess with your money. And if they do guess, it's going to be stamped a guess, and you're going to know it's a guess, and it's your decision. And sometimes we fix cars by guessing, and the customer sometimes wins and sometimes doesn't. But if you can't get the problem to act up, then there has to be there sometimes is a time you guess. 602-508-0960. Ed and Harry, you guys are my one and two callers. On the other side of this break, I'll see you in about 3 minutes or so, as long as they keep with the log. I think it's 3.5 minutes. One way or another, Mark and Alan here at your service, 602-508-0960. We have three lines available, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Let me get some business here. Let me talk about Kurtz Auto. Kurtz Auto is an independent, family-owned auto repair facility that focuses on your needs, not their needs. Your needs. Since they opened their doors in 1987, Kurtz Auto Repair has been working on domestic and import gas and diesels. Again, ASE certified technicians, they're well trained, and they've taken classes, up-to-date classes, that keep them on the leading edge of technology. Kurt believes that being an excellent auto repair facility is more than just the repair. It's making certain that you trust them and we fix your symptom and that they offer you the very best treatment and work towards that word trust. Kurt's Auto is located at I-17 in Bell in Phoenix. And when I tell you that I get lots of attaboys about Kurt's, I'm not just kidding you. I'm telling you, there's a heck of a lot of attaboys when it comes to Kurt's. And I know he's not telling the people to do it. I think that people just feel obligated, or not obligated, but I think people feel like it's important to share that information, and they do it with me. Okay, Ed, you're up. Thank you for holding, Ed. How can I help you?
Yes, I have a 1971 Plymouth Duster. It's a 318 with a 904 transmission, three-speed automatic. And I want to tow the car. I need to know when should I disconnect the differential? I mean, can I tow it in neutral for a little while?
Now, this is an automatic?
Yes.
Okay. I can't answer your question because I don't know the answer to that. I'll tell you who to call to answer, to ask it. I want you to call, what part of town do you live in?
North Phoenix.
Okay. I want you to call Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange.
Okay.
Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange. Have you got a pencil handy?
I'm writing it down as we speak.
I'm going to give you his phone number. It's 602-275-9671. And you've got to call before 11. Because I think he goes out into the shop at 11, and he doesn't take calls after that, so call before 11.
Today, or does
You can try him today. You can try him today. So the question to him is, you know, how far can I? I'm quite sure you can tow that to the garage and back, or to the car wash and back, or small jaunts around town with it in neutral. I feel pretty confident in that, but I'd prefer Phil answer that. As far as towing it for any length of time, there's a couple things you can do. They make a collar assembly that you can disconnect the drive shaft. So they're going to put a spline in the middle or in the front of your drive shaft. So this collar slides over both splines, which connects the drive shaft, or you undo it and the front half is steady and the back half spins. So you can basically tow your car from here to New York City if you want.
Right.
So there, and then of course you can always pull it out. But here's what you do: when you pull the drive shaft out, and you can't just disconnect the back of it and wire it up because it'll fall down, hit the road, and yank it out, and you're going to have a mess that's going to cost you $1,000 to fix. So you have to be able to pull the drive shaft completely out. Then they make a special cone that goes in the back of the transmission so you don't lose all the fluid. So those are the two things. And then you take the drive shaft and, you know, put it wherever you want and wrap up both ends with some old towels and stuff like that. The best place to put the drive shaft is on your wife's lap of the pickup truck that you're towing the duster with.
Oh, yeah, that will go over really
So that's, take it from me. I'm. But anyway, Phil can help you answer the question is, what are the boundaries to tow the duster and with all four on the ground in neutral? What are my boundaries? That's the question.
Okay.
Okay?
I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Ed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Harry, you're up next. How can we help you?
Yeah, Mark, great show. I got two questions, one for you and one for Alan.
Okay.
And one is, I know you've talked a lot about oil. I've seen some of these ads on TV about a Penn's oil and their new oil that they're making out of natural gas. And it seems to be a synthetic, I think, of some sort.
Yeah.
Do you have any information on that, or what?
A synthetic is man-made, so we're using man-made. A conventional oil is an 80-20 oil. It's 80% Mother Nature and 20% engine additive package. The package helps the oil, the 80%, make it for 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 miles. So
okay.
It's got wear inhibitors, it's got zinc, it's got detergents, it's got something to control moisture. So those are the additive package. On a synthetic oil, we don't really have to add a bunch of stuff to counteract the sulfur in Mother Nature oil, so we can leave that additive out. And all the other bad things that are bad about that 80%, we don't need to put additives in because they're not there in a synthetic.
So
and it's just
synthetic.
a it's just a marketing ploy, in my opinion. Okay. It's we start off with, you know, using something that's green, like the word natural gas, and we end up with an oil. The fact of the matter is that the top of the can is going to have the same S designation as all the rest of the oils that are synthetic of that weight, and it's not going to be any better or any worse. And if I were you, I'd shop price. I sure wouldn't shop what color the can is.
Right, yeah. I just went through the line. I thought, well, some new outer, new process or whatever. But this is, like you say, a marketing thing.
Yeah.
Okay, I got a question for Alan.
Okay. Sure.
Okay. You do programmers and all kinds of stuff like that. I have an old 03 GM Duramax.
Yep.
And it's got a Banks exhaust and also exhaust brake on it. And I know they sell controllers and whatever for theirs, but the one you use, or
recommend?
Yeah.
That's an easy question. I'm not a huge fan of the Banks, and only because I think that there is better stuff out there for less money.
Okay.
The stuff that we use primarily for Ford and for the Duramax stuff is the Edge products. We've been using them for years. I remember when my dad first did a buying direct from Edge back in 2000, long before it was cool to work on diesels, and that was for his 01 Duramax. I love their stuff. I love the most about their stuff. Well, first of all, it's the price is good, but their customer support is just second to none. Their stuff works great, and for your 03 Duramax, it would be a good that's what I would do. I mean, they have two different models. Real quick, they have a module, and then they have a programmer. I can go on and on and on about the advantages and disadvantages to each, but if you want to shoot me an email, I can kind of go over that with you.
Okay, let me chime in too. The bank system is just a system with no parameters that can adjust and no options, no menus. It's just bolt on and that's it. Today, we can put a television screen on your dashboard, a little bitty one, and you can up and down the power range through how many different levels?
I mean up to 7 or 8 levels.
Okay. So if you want to be Rapid Roy the race car boy, and you want to smoke your four-wheel drive diesel all the way across an intersection to show off, you just to 7, and you do a little brake to get the tires spinning, and then smoke them all the way across here. You want to do that. If you want fuel economy, or if you want to just back it up to see how far can I go low before I really know it, or and you want to find out where the sweet spot is to go empty and full, and we will tell you what number not to exceed if you're going to be hauling a trailer, because that's right. Where you're going to get into trouble. But now the parameters and the menu is huge. And I got to tell you something. I remember when we put that Edge, and actually how many different versions of Edge did we have between 2005 and 2014 when I bought my Dodge?
A lot.
9 years. I don't know how many different versions we went
13
into.
13 years.
2005?
Oh, 05. Well, you had 01.
No, but I didn't buy my Duramax till 05.
You had the, you had that gray one. That was the
01. Oh, you're right. That's the first Duramax.
Yeah.
And then I bought the red one in 2005.
Yeah.
You know, I hate it when you correct me in front of people like that. So the idea is that the programmers got better, and there's, all of them have had struggles. Here's the difference. The really good guys recognize the problem, and when you call them, they don't blame it on you.
Right.
Because they already know the problem is theirs. So And what's the difference? Which is the TV screen where you can float up and down across the range, and which one do you have to stop, plug it in, and change the range?
The module you can change on the fly.
Okay.
And then the programming is stuff that you have to stop and change. And there's advantages and disadvantages to either of them, but that
Just
would take a lot of
throw
show.
Two numbers.
Price wise?
Yeah.
Programmers are typically cheaper, anywhere from $300 to $800, I would say.
Okay.
Depending on gas, diesel. And then, the modules are typically more than that. I haven't bought a module in a while, but I would probably say $700 to $1,200, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Okay. And then there's some installation issues as far as the module's concerned.
Yeah, correct.
Because
uh-huh.
we got to mount the TV screen on the A pillar, and uh-huh. we got to paint the A pillar, and we can incorporate it into all that fancy stuff. But
right.
The answer is, and the bank system, again, it's a fine system. It's just a Fred Flintstone system. When it's compared to all the different options. restrictions that we have today. I know that you have modules that can take the speed limiter off of my Dodge truck.
Certainly.
At 96 miles an hour and put it to 140.
Right.
You got modules that I can put tires on and I can calibrate my speedometer down to the NAT's tail end to make sure that the speedometer and odometer are correct. So I've got all that
available. As a matter of fact, getting back to the TPMS, they're starting to work. One of my recommendations years ago was starting on the programmers is to give us TPMS parameters to go in there and program, and they have since started doing that. Now, they started doing it with the Jeep because there's obviously a need for it when they go rock crawling and stuff, but I think in the future you're going to see TPMS parameters in some of those things as well.
Tire pressure monitoring systems, it's the little light on your dash. For all of you that don't go to get the acronym, it's the little gauge on your dash that tells you when tire's lower. It'll tell you what your air pressure is on all four tires. What we're doing is we're just faking the signal out. That's all we're doing. We're going to take the number that's given to the computer, and we're going to change that number and give it back to the computer. So we're just going to get in the middle of that transaction and change things. It's the difference in speed, tire size, and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
The tire size says that it's a 16-inch tire. We're going to say, no, it's really a 20-inch. So 16 comes out in a number. It's always a number format. So the number is 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 17, ABC. That comes out that way. We change that number, and we feed it something that says 20-inch tire, and that's it. Thank you, Harry. Thank you very much. And if you have any questions, Mark at MarkSalem.com. Anybody else? We have open lines available, 602-508-0960.
And Harry, too, real quick, if you want to send Mark an email, and then he can forward it on to me, and we can go from there.
Well, don't you have Alan?
Yeah, I have Alan at SalemBoysAuto.com.
Okay.
That's what I have, yeah.
Okay. Alan at SalemBoysAuto.com.
A-L-A-N.
A-L-A-N, yeah, that's right. A-L-A-N. All righty. Who is the other one? Jeremy? Dan, good morning to you, buddy. What can we do for you?
Yes, I'm in the market for a new car, and one of the things that bugs me about present cars is I get something simple broke, and it's a lot of labor to get to it and fix it. I had a radiator fan that cost $150, and there was 3 hours of labor to take the bumper off to get to it.
Yeah.
Is there any manufacturer that builds their cars with maintenance in mind?
No, that example, which is a perfect example of, I bet, do you have a Honda by chance?
That was a Volkswagen.
Okay, same thing. There are cars out there, including all of them, that have idiosyncrasies. There are cars out there that take something very simple and make it as unbelievable. And it's embarrassing for us to have to say that, you know, in order to replace your radiator in your truck, it's $150, but in order to replace radiator in your car, it's $400 labor. So we understand that. But no, there is nobody out there that their cars get an A from bumper to bumper. But I do want to tell you this. Those kinds of things, if we process 30 cars a day, those kinds of things only really happen once a week. So if you've had some bad luck with a couple of the cars that you own or that you do own, I think it's just the luck of the draw for you. Because really and truly, that doesn't happen very often. I know that there's a car out there right now that we can replace the headlight assembly, the bulb, in most any car for under $100. And there's a couple out there that are $300.
Oh, yeah.
So when you... If you look, let's look historically, other than the bad experience you've had, has anybody else had any bad experiences that you know of? And the answer is probably no. So I wouldn't let that dictate what you're going to buy. I wouldn't let those bad experiences do that. Just pick something that makes you really happy and just trust that if you've already been in the tar barrel twice, chances of you being in the tar barrel again are pretty slim.
Yeah, I was just hoping there was someone out there that considered that I had a 944 Porsche 84, and I could work on that one, and it was fairly simple to work on.
I could
do the brakes. I could do a lot of things.
You're right. You're exactly right, Dan. What you say is exactly right. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. All five lines are available. We'll be back for the second hour of our show in just a minute.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem, Alan Salem here at your service for the next hour. If you have a car question or a car problem, It's really kind of easy. We are here to help you. We're here to help you understand your car, and if you have any questions that we can help you with, we're happy to do that. And the easy way to do that is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And as you can see, I've lost control of the monitor completely. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Phoenix Body Works. Greg May, who is the owner, is your advocate if you have an insurance claim. Now, if your car's been involved in a collision, here's the issue. It's either going to be your insurance company or the other driver's insurance company, and both of them have an agenda to fix the car as least expensive as possible. But Greg's going to be your advocate. He knows how to work with insurance companies. They respect one another. Greg's going to make sure your car's put back the right way on time at an affordable price with quality parts. It's important to repair your vehicle to its pre-accident condition. So basically you're saying, put me back the way you found me. We've been recommending Phoenix Body Works for several years, and we've had great comments and reviews from people who say that they're really happy they went there. I'm proud to have them on my best car repair shops list. Phoenix Body Works serves Anthem, New River, North Phoenix, and they're located at 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley. Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 9 to 12, 623-582-1434. 582-1434. Phoenix Body Works, great place. All right, you got anything for the betterment of the group?
No. Got a lot of good topics today. TPMS and Duramax stuff and all the chips, all the stuff I handle on a day-to-day basis. If you guys have any tire questions, brand, separation, balance, any questions like that, I'm happy to help you. We do a lot of that stuff, fixed vibrations, and love talking about that kind of stuff. So,
And that is something that is a skill all of its own, is vibrations.
Absolutely.
And what's missing, I think, with people who perhaps try but are unsuccessful, is the part where the customer's really involved.
Yeah.
The customer has to be involved. And we have to talk to the customer. We have to decide from the customer. We have to have the customer show us exactly what they're talking about. And then sometimes you do something, you make an adjustment, and you move some tires around, and then the customer has to be able to say better, worse, or the same.
Right.
Once we get on the track, it's kind of like you're a bloodhound on the track of vibration, but you need the customer's input. And to just drop the keys off and say, I got a vibration, and walk away, that's the death knell for your – it's not going to happen.
The other thing that, that you find is a lot of shops are either mechanical or they are aftermarket, and there's not a lot of crossover. So what we see a lot is people coming in with a vibration, and everything mechanical looks okay. The tire appears to be in good shape, and the rotors are straight, and everything is straight. Well, you've got aftermarket wheels on there, but you need to take it somewhere else for that. Well, we can look at both things. Sometimes you have maybe a bent wheel or a hub centering ring where the hub is not centering on, or the wheel is not centering on the hub, or you have the wrong lug nuts in there, or you have high, I mean, there's a lot of different stuff. So we can look on both sides. We can look on the mechanical side and make sure all the components are working correctly. We can also look on the aftermarket side, make sure all components are working correctly and making them all mesh. So that's one thing. We love vibrations, to be real honest with you, and we love to fix them. There's nothing but, I can't tell you how many times people call me and they say, I got this vibration. And they explain it to me, and it certainly sounds like balance. And I say, it sure sounds like balance. I've had them balanced three times. Okay. And guess what fixes it?
Well,
balance.
And a lot of times, what I think what serves people best is they can determine this with a little bit of effort.
Mm-hmm.
The question is there's three places a vibration can occur. Okay. Suspension.
Yeah.
Engine and transmission.
Yeah.
Okay. Three places. They can go to any transmission shop, a good one, and the transmission guy can eliminate the transmission.
That, yeah. Uh-huh.
So once we get that out of the way, and almost always the transmission guy can also say if this is an engine related vibration.
Right.
Have we got a bad flywheel? Have we got a bad harmonic balancer? Have we got a bad torque converter?
Tell me a
quick story about the fan clutch the other day.
We had a 6-liter Ford, I think it was a 04, and we had this vibration, and it was after we had done a bunch of engine work. And we had added a programmer, and we had replaced during this mechanical work. We had replaced the fan clutch, and we had this vibration. It was kind of on a tip-in acceleration, and I thought I would have bet my house that it was a drive shaft vibration from the new added horsepower and torque from the programmer. It was being put into a RPM range that it wasn't, with the amount of power, it wasn't normally used to having, because it certainly seemed like a driveline vibration. But we looked over everything and we couldn't find it, and then we ended up doing something and shipping them off. Him calling me and said, no, it's about the same, maybe a tad bit better. And but he also told me two key components. He said, my AC doesn't blow cold when I'm stopped. And there was one other thing that that he said, and bingo, we knew exactly what it was. It was a fan clutch, and we brought it in, and the bearing had gone bad on the fan clutch. A brand new fan clutch. The bearing had gone bad. The fan blade got wobbly, and it cut the wires going to the electric fan clutch.
Okay.
And it was.
And those are the things when you interview somebody, those are the things you're looking for. You're not trying to put words in their mouth, folks. You say to us what you think we want to hear. Just talk to us about that. I can't tell you in 32 years how many times someone has said something to me that put me on the right track, and they said it as if it was no big deal.
Completely unrelated. When he told me, you know, he had this vibration coming from what we thought was a drive shaft or tires or axle or something, and he told me, oh, and by the way, my AC doesn't blow cold at idle. I mean, it was, he had no idea that the two, and as soon as he said that, bingo, it hit me right there. Well, fan clutch isn't working. It's not pulling air across the condenser at idle. So,
and you could have, I don't know if you said it or not, but I would have said to him, okay, when you're on the highway at 55, 60 miles an hour, how does your air conditioning work? It works great. And it really gets bad when you get to a slower speed, like 20 under or a stop. Yes, bingo. We got an airflow problem across the condenser.
Yep.
All righty. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Robert. Robert, thanks for holding. How can we help you?
Yeah, hey, Mark. Listen, first I want to tell you how much I appreciate what you do.
Thank you.
Man, I don't care how smart you are. When you go to get your car fixed, you're at the mercy of whoever you're talking to. And if they don't have any mercy, you're done.
It makes it tough. Well, here, let me change it. Let me change it, though. If they have their interests in front of yours, there's nothing you can do about it. So,
obviously, and that's why I appreciate what you do so much.
Thank you.
I've got an 02 Lexus ES 300, pushing 200,000. It's been a wonderful, wonderful car, but, you know, like me, it's getting old and starting to break. I've noticed lately I've got some noise from the air conditioning fan. Sounds like maybe the motor or a bearing type of noise, and it's kind of slowing down the airflow. I'm just wondering, you know, is it the obvious, and if so, what's it going to take to fix it?
Well, what I would do is I'd take an inductive amp probe, and I'd find.
Oh, I got one.
Okay, well then go to the power side or the ground side of the blower motor.
I was kidding.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if you were kidding, because you said that right away, and I went, "Wow, this guy knows what he's talking about."
You can buy an inductive amp probe.
A lot of things, but not inductive. What is it?
Amp probe.
Yeah, you can buy one at Harbor Freight. The inductive amp probe is like a it's a big device that you open up the jaws, you put the wire inside, and then you close the jaws, and the jaws have a big, I mean, you could fit a giant hot dog inside the jaws, so you could fit a whole bunch of wires, but you're just going to look at the amp draw. And so I'm going to look at the amp draw, and if there's a 20-amp fuse on that, that's protecting that circuit, I certainly better have less than 25 or 20 amps. So if I'm sitting there at 17 and 18 and 19 amps, then that blower motor is drawing too much amps. I'm going to go speed 1, 2, 3, 4, however many speeds, I'm going to look at the amp draw. Here's what you got to do. You got to fix this soon if it hasn't already wiped out the switch, because the electricity that the blower motor draws comes through the blower switch, and that's the weak link. So what happens is people put up with a blower motor problem for a long time. Meanwhile, we heat up and overheat the switch until it finally fails, and now we have two issues, and they're always in two separate parts of the car, which is two different labor operations, one to go get the stupid switch and one to go get the blower motor. So my advice to you is stay away from high speed, which is going to draw the most amps. Use 1, 2, and 3 until you get it addressed. Another thing is, has the cabin filter ever been changed?
Oh, I remember it being changed a couple of years ago.
Okay. Well, the cabin filter is like the filter in your air conditioning system in your house. And sometimes they'll plug up and really get ugly and stinky. Oftentimes they're sold for no other reason other than I can make a heck of a lot of profit on it.
That's what I thought.
Okay. Profit. So, and that's why, you know what the fix is there? Get your old one back. I want the old one back. Put the old one in a box and give it back to me.
Yeah, I always ask for parts.
Yeah. So, and you know, chances of them having another ES200 in the shop with a dirty one that they're going to be able to give you, it's just not going to happen. So the idea is just ask. But in your case, check the cabin filter first, and let's take it out and see if the sound changes and if the volume changes dramatically, and if the filter's dirty, then that's your problem. If not, and you still have all the other symptoms, then you're going to end up with a blower motor.
And that's up under the dash, and I could probably find it myself, right?
Yeah, you just turn it on high and just go start feeling around. You'll be able to find it.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Great idea. One more quick thing.
Okay.
Right rear window doesn't work when I press the switch. Could it be a fuse?
No. No, the windows are on a circuit breaker because if your wife accidentally rolls your head up in the window, you're not going to want to wait till she goes to the auto parts store to get a fuse.
I tried that one time. Didn't work.
So it's on a circuit breaker. So all you have to do is count to 10 after the circuit breaker pops, and then the window will work again. Here's the question. Does the window work differently by using the switch at the window compared to the master switch? You have to answer that question.
Very good question, and I don't know the answer. I will find out.
And the answer is obvious. Hey, Mark, when I use the switch at the door, it works perfectly, but when I use the switch at the master switch, it doesn't work at all. Bingo. We're already home. So that's as easy as it gets. I appreciate your call. Thank you, Robert. All righty, let's go to Joel. Joel, you're up next. How can we help you?
Hi, Mark. About a month ago, I called you up, and I said check engine light was on and it was red, and you said it's not. That's bad. Well, as it turned out, it was orange or yellow.
Okay.
Now, what happened was I was ready to go and see what was wrong. I was going to go to the dealer, have them check it. The next day, it was off. Now, here's my question about that. I always top off my gas tank. Could that topping off on a hot day when it's so full have made my check engine light go on?
It depends on what the code was. When the check engine light comes on, there's behind the scenes, there's a number that gives us the zip code of the particular problem. And if we went in there and we saw that it was the evaporative system, and perhaps maybe the canister was defective or the canister was seeing liquid gas, then the answer is yes. So here's what you do. This is going to cost nothing. What I want you to do, Joel, is the next time you fill it up, let's stuff the tank again. Then see if the light comes on.
But you know what's so funny? I only filled my tank up 3/4 full now. The light never comes on again.
Okay, but let's do it the other way around. Let's go ahead and stuff it once and see if the light comes back on. And if it does, then you've answered your own question, right?
I see.
That's all I got to do.
Now I got one more question.
Okay.
If I may.
You bet.
Once in a while, I get like something happens. I got the air conditioning on. It's nice and ice cold on my Kia 2008 Kia Rio. But I notice every once in a while, it doesn't happen that often, I'll get a hesitation.
Okay.
And then it comes right back on.
All right. I'm going to take your second question right after I take this break. Okay. So we'll be right back. 602-508-0960. The open lines are available. Joel, you'll be first again. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to, Jeremy, make sure you send me a tape of this because I have thoroughly messed up the tape I was making, and I don't even know what I did wrong. I did something really wrong. Nevertheless, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. I tell you that my transmission shops I'm very, very, very proud of, and Quality Transmission has been with me for better than 25 years, and Bob and his staff really do know transmissions, and they're not the kind of shop that has decided to go into every other aspect of the car, because they'll raise their hand and say to you, I'm not the very best for that part of your car. The fact of the matter is they're really the best when it comes to transmissions and differentials and transfer case and four-wheel drives. So if you're looking for a really good transmission shop, Quality Transmission is in Tempe on McClintock between University and the 202. He's been around since 1977. He's a good guy. He's honest. And he'll do a good job for you. But what's really important is he'll talk to you and drive your car for you for free. So he's not going to fix your car for free, but he's going to talk to you and drive your car and discuss with you and ask you questions. And that's the important part of getting your car fixed properly. So calling around to get prices on a transmission is a bad idea because everybody's going to bid what's convenient for them. The idea is get the repair first and then get an itemized statement. Then you can call around. Quality Transmission, again, on University in Tempe, north of University, between University and the 202 on McClintock or Hayden Road. Let's go to the phones. And
we've got to go back to Joel. We didn't finish up with Joel.
Joel.
Yes.
And what was the question on the table?
The question was, every once in a while, first of all, I got a 2008 Kia, only got 24,000 miles on it. And every once in a while, the air conditioner would just, for a nanosecond, would just stop and then go back on. It blows cold air, but I was just wondering why it would just make that hesitation.
Okay, that's really nothing you should worry about, because right now no one's going to be able to find it if it's that intermittent. You're wasting your time, you're wasting your money. Whatever is wrong will get worse and easier to find. Trying to fix this now is a huge problem for you and for the shop that you assign that responsibility to. The problem is we'd have to hook up a significant amount of lights and data to the car to find out where the problem is at, even if there is a problem. It could easily go into defrost mode. The blower motor itself could go into defrost mode. There's lots of things that are possible, but it's way too early in this problem's life, and it's not going to break you down. It's not going to cause you the need of a tow truck. So just wait till it gets worse and easier to find. That's
it. I appreciate your comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joel. And Dick, you're up next. How can I help you? Hi, Dick. Sir?
DeVille?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
And the red light comes on. It says service airbag system.
Okay.
And do I have to take that to a dealer to get that fixed?
No, you don't. What kind of car is it?
It's an 05 Cadillac DeVille.
Okay. And let me ask you a question. Is the light yellow or red?
It's red.
Okay. And it says service airbag system?
Yes.
Okay. What it's telling you is I've lost contact with some of the sensors. 75% of the time, it's the spring underneath the steering wheel called the clock spring. And let me tell you how you can diagnose it yourself. Are you willing to try it?
Sure.
Okay. In the morning when you get in your car, I want you to park the steering wheel in a different place for the next 10 mornings in a row. Otherwise, the top of the steering wheel, I want you to put it at 9 o'clock, and then midnight, and then 3 o'clock, and then 7 o'clock, and 6 o'clock. I want you to move the steering wheel around and park it in a different position. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Then in the morning, I don't want you to touch the steering wheel. I want you to stick your key in the car and start it up. Wait until all the lights go out. You're going to find, by parking that steering wheel in a couple of different places, that you're not going to get the airbag light on. Okay, so now we know the light's not on. This is the first morning in 3 mornings the light's not on.
Mm-hmm.
So I want you then to hit the steering wheel with your fist like this. Okay.
On the rim of the steering wheel?
That's right.
Okay.
If between that and turning the steering wheel, a full turn left and a full turn right, one of those will make the light come on.
Mm-hmm.
And you've just diagnosed it. If you explain that to your shop and you say, depends on where I park the steering wheel at night, and sometimes I start it up in the morning, light's gone. Sometimes it's there. When it's there, I just say to heck with it, and I go ahead and use it. Now, right now, the airbag system is down, so if you have a crash, you're not going to have airbags. That's what it's telling you. I have put the system down because I've lost control of some of the inputs. But the diagnostic procedure for us is to go in there and do the same thing, except we're going to plug a computer into your car, and hopefully your car is going to say, turn the stream a little bit more. Right there, Mark, right there. Ooh, right there's the sweet spot, Mark. Hold it right there. Okay, go left. Oh, yep, there. That's almost the conversation we're going to have. So, okay. and we can do that, have that conversation 10 times in a row on 10 different days, and it's not going to happen bad. Because this little spring inside, sometimes it makes contacts and sometimes it doesn't. I'm just telling you, 75% of the time, it's the clock spring underneath the steering wheel. But no, to answer your question bluntly, you do not have to go to any good independent shop with ASE Master technicians or any good dealership can handle that problem for you just fine.
Okay, but if I get it where the light goes out, do I still have to have the clock spring replaced? Or?
Yes, you do, because there's a bad connection underneath the steering wheel. It's just that you helped find it.
Ah, okay.
See, you're going to be able to go in and say, hey, depending on where I leave the steering wheel at night and in the morning, sometimes light's on and sometimes light's off. And you know what else? I can make the light come on in the morning. If I beat on the steering wheel a couple of times, then the light will come on. Mm-hmm. What you've done is work for him. You've saved yourself between $50 and $125 worth of diagnostic. He's still going to want to verify what you're talking about, but he's going to spend a lot less time because you've helped him.
He's probably going to want to kiss you.
Yeah, well, he, you know what? If you came into my shop with that kind of information, I'd give you a hug.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, I may not kiss you, but I may give you a hug.
Well, what's a repair like that run?
It just depends on the car and all that kind of stuff. I'm saying probably $250 to $400.
Wow. Okay.
All righty. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
You betcha. And when we come back, Arturo, you're number one. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Alan is sitting here next to you. And we've got your interest in front of our own interest. And all you have to do is call us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Action Auto is a full-service, family-owned and operated auto repair shop that's been serving the Deer Valley and the North Phoenix area since 1983. Tom at Action Auto and his team strive to provide the very best automotive service. And make sure your experience is very good and you feel as though you were a part of the problem or the problem solving, the diagnostic, and the repair. They want you to be involved in every aspect. So they understand that communication is really important. That's the reason why they're going to ask you to spend a little extra time with them at the front counter so that they can ask you questions. They have ASE Master certified technicians, and they want you as car owners to understand what they're doing and why so that you can make informed decisions. Action Auto is located at I-17 in Deer Valley up there in Phoenix, and Tom is a great guy. He's been on the show before, and he's just a really, really nice guy.
Fun guy to be around.
Oh, he is that, yeah. Too. Arturo, good morning to you. I'm sorry to make you wait so long. How can I help you? Oh, Jack, let's go to Jack. Jack, Arturo, I'm really sorry. If you want to call back, 602-508-0960, I'll take you first. But we're going to take Jack real quick. Jack, good morning. Jack? Hello, Jack. Okay. We're just
having all kinds of phone difficulties here.
Well, we're having phone difficulties all over the place because I finally got my computer working again so we can actually tape the show. That helps me out a lot because sometimes they say, did you say this or did you say that?
Yep.
And sometimes I have to go back and look at the tape to see what the heck I said. But nevertheless, what's important with car repair is just a matter of communication. And it's really, really important. Women do a much better job than men in this respect. They'll make the noise for you. They'll tell you about the noise. They'll tell you about the vibration. They tell you in layman's terms what the vibration, where they're feeling it. If you ask a guy if he feels the vibration through the seat of his pants or his steering wheel, 9 out of 10 times he'll say both. If you ask a lady about a vibration, 9 out of 10 times she'll pick a spot, and 9 out of 10 times she's right.
Yeah.
So what's the difference if it's a vibration through the seat of your pants? Where
it's
are you
usually associated with the rear of the car?
Okay, is that front wheel drive, rear wheel drive, four wheel drive? It's all the same.
Pretty much. Okay. Yeah, pretty much.
And if it's the steering wheel, then what else do you want to know about the steering wheel?
I want to know if it's when braking. Okay. I want to know if it's side to side or up and down. I want to know. Basically, those are the three right there. That will nail it down to about 99% of the stuff.
Okay. So, did we get Jack back? Jeremy? We lost. Oh,
did we get Jack back? Oh.
Okay,
oh,
no problem. I thought we lost everybody there. We lost everybody. The side-to-side variation is typically play in the steering, am I right? Okay. If it's up and down, it's truly a vibration. It's probably tire-related, wheel-related, or something like that.
Right.
And then if it's just braking and the vibration occurs when braking, it's going to be brakes.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yep.
And that's kind of where you and your staff go to because the vibration.
Yep.
I'm especially proud of you and your staff because of the vibrations that I'm personally involved at the front counter when they say nobody else can fix it or this is what I've had done. And most of what they've had already done goes in my ears, one ear and out the other.
Yeah, me too.
It's just a matter of talk to me, show me, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
All righty. Hey, Jack, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. I can hear you, or I could hear you before, but you couldn't hear me.
No problem.
Okay.
That's our fault, Jack. That's our fault.
It's okay. I'm in the middle of one right now. My son called me yesterday, an 07 Chevrolet Impala, 53,000 miles.
Okay.
He called me yesterday and said, Dad, he said, it's like a dead miss. It's never happened before, driving at 40 miles an hour. And so I picked it up this morning, drove it a couple miles. It was fine. I went to have the check engine lights on, so I went to have it scanned. The first guy couldn't get it to wake up. I went to the second guy and got a code which indicates a low oil pressure sensor, oil pressure input. It was just serviced 2 days ago, and it's full of oil. And then there's one code that he couldn't find in the computer. But as I drove this morning, it was fine. When I left the first place, it's like a dead miss, a millisecond, just completely dead. It happened two or three times upon the slight acceleration. And now I'm back in it, and it's driving fine.
Is it always around that 40 miles an hour range? Otherwise, if you get up above 40, you don't experience the miss?
Well, that's when it happened to him yesterday. But when I drove it this morning, I was pulling out, just gently accelerating onto the street at maybe 10 or 15 miles an hour. And it was two or three times in a row, a dead miss, about 4 or 5 seconds apart.
Okay.
And now I've been driving it for 5 minutes, and, you know, it's fine.
Okay. All right, well, our a code reader is one thing, but a scanner is quite another. And under the best of conditions, somebody's going to be able to plug their scanner in and go for a ride and get it to happen and be able to freeze frame that particular ignition system that they're looking at, whether they're looking at the primary side or the secondary side. They may have to get it to happen two or three times before they can isolate which side of the motor it's on, whether it's primary ignition, secondary ignition, or whether it's a crankshaft sensor or a camshaft sensor. All of those things can cause an engine miss.
Right.
I'll be honest with you. I'll tell you exactly what I would tell my next-door neighbor who I happen to think the world of. This is one of those that you might want to wait just a little while on until it gets worse.
Sounds like you're in the very early stages of this problem.
Right. And if you want to do what everybody else does, you can throw all spark plugs in it. You can put all new boots in it or wires if it's got boots or wires. Or you can put all the new coils in it. And then if that doesn't work, then you can put a crankshaft sensor and a camshaft sensor in it. And if that doesn't work, then you can bring it in. Then you can bring it in.
Yeah.
But that's not really what I want you to do. Here's you haven't said anything about some really significant issues. For instance, I'll give you a good one. You haven't said anything about the exhaust smelling like sulfur and driving you crazy.
No.
And the reason I noticed that is because if you would have said that, I would have said, oh boy, we have got some major fuel running through this, and that's why there's a sulfur smell. So we've either got a dead miss in a cylinder all the time, so all that gas, instead of being exploded and consumed, is now going into the catalytic converter, or we've got a rich condition that's causing the engine miss. I listen carefully to what you say. And without that, that would be just about the only thing I can think of where I'd say, wait a minute, we need to address this now. You don't even have a good code yet. And then, of course, those kids, that three-whiskered kid doesn't have a prayer in heck to be able to find something wrong with it because his whole focus is to sell you parts. So
yeah.
It's okay, but like the code, it just tells you what state the problem is at. It doesn't tell you what street, what address, what zip code, what telephone number. It just tells you a zip code.
Yeah.
So and I'll tell you something. The other day, I had an O2 sensor code, and he had had it taken. The wife had taken it somewhere where they read the code and said it was an O2 sensor. And I'm telling you the truth on this. The fuel filter was plugged up.
No.
That's all it was. And what was happening was is the computer had the valve on the fuel wide open. Otherwise, the computer's holding the gas hose, and the valve is wide open. And the O2 sensor says, I want more fuel. And the computer goes, I'm giving you all I got. I promise I'm giving you all I got. And the O2 sensor keeps saying, give me more fuel, give me more fuel, give me more. Well, pretty soon the O2 sensor says, I got a problem. Well, everybody replaces the O2 sensor. Well, he's the messenger. So in this particular case, we look at fuel formation. We look at fuel pressure and volume, and it's substandard. So we pull the fuel filter out. Now, do you remember watching Louis Armstrong play the trumpet?
Yep.
You remember how his cheeks used to blow up?
Yes.
That's what we call a Louis Armstrong fuel filter. You blow on it because I want my technicians, they're bad guys. These are tough sons of a guns. You better put your lips on that fuel filter, and you better blow as hard as you can. Because if you blow hard and your lips swell up like Louis Armstrong, then that's a Louis Armstrong, which means it's 100% plugged, and you got the problem solved. So that's what I'd do if I was you. All righty?
Well, I had to start somewhere on a Saturday, so
no,
I appreciate
I'll tell you one thing
advice.
You can do is go to a car wash and just gently mist the engine with water and then go drive it again. If the problem comes back with a vengeance, you have a spark jumping somewhere where it shouldn't.
Okay.
All right, good luck to you.
Okay.
Bruce, stay right there. You're next. I'll be right back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 48 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Mark and Alan here at your service. We have different skill sets. He is, I am the sensei, and he is grasshopper. And let me tell you about IMM Auto Service first. Way back in 1972, I needed a Fiat, and IMM Auto Service in Tempe, in the northeast quadrant of Tempe, up the 101-202 exchange, right there, it's just south and west of that. I talked to David Enriquez then, and we've been friends ever since then, because he helped me obtain a Fiat for a legal case I was working on, and he was a gentleman the entire time. He was a great guy. IMM has master techs, and they work on domestics and imports, but they specialize in Volvos, Saabs, Fiats, and Alfa Romeos. If you have one of those cars, Volvo, Saab, Fiat, or Alfa Romeo, really, really, and truly, I'm here to tell you that 99% of the shops struggle with those kinds of cars, especially when it gets to the real technical stuff, like why is the air conditioning blowing into the trunk and not into the dash? Those are the ones you're going to need a professional on. IMM Auto Service is that kind of place. They're close to ASU. They do everything with a penny estimate. He's going to give you a to-the-penny estimate, and he won't be a penny over his estimate. He gives you a 12-month, 12,000-mile warranty. He's close to ASU. IMM Auto Service. David Enriquez, what a great guy he is. All right, let's go to Bruce. Bruce, you're up, buddy.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for sending my son up to Thunderbird Auto off of your website. Very good job done by them to check out a used car before he bought it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. And they were very good, and they treated him very well. My real issue, I am a project guy, and I'm working on a 91 Corvette, and I'm overhauling the brakes. I don't know how to bleed the ABS system on this thing.
Okay. Is the pedal go to the floor right now?
Say that again.
Is the pedal go to the floor right now after you've already loaded all the calipers and it's sitting on four tires? Does the pedal go to the floor?
Negative. It actually drives fine. I just know that I need to replace the brake fluid in the ABS system and don't know how to do so.
Okay. On a 91, I'd have to look, but I'm going to guess that it's not going to be any different. You have a couple of different choices. If you're going to replace the brake fluid, I'm going to give you the Fred Flintstone way, which is a way that we use every once in a while. I'm going to have you take a quart of brake fluid, dot 3 or dot 4, and turn it upside down in your master cylinder. And
okay.
That's with the lid off, of course. And then I want you to open up all four bleeders and grab yourself an iced tea and a flashlight and a lawn chair and just sit there and watch as the brake fluid begins to drain out of all four bleeders. And keep an eye on the quart and don't let it get empty. And sooner or later the quart will be empty and you'll see the level in the master cylinder start dropping, and don't let it get below the ad mark before you start shutting bleeders off.
Okay. But will that bleed the ABS system, the ABS pump, and all that?
Well, and that's the second part of what we're going to do. after we get clean fluid in there and get as much as we can, then you're going to do the get your wife, get your son, get your neighbor. The motor's running. Please pump it, push it to the floor. Let's not rapid pump it at all because that aerates the fluid and that causes all kinds of problems.
Right.
Just apply the brake for me. Hold it firmly. Okay, now I'm going to open up this bleeder. Tell me when the pedal begins to move. Oh, it's moving. Yes, yes, thank you very much. Is it at the floor? Yes, it is. I've got the bleeder shut. Please let go of the brake pedal gently and count to five so that the master cylinder can recover as well and gulp some more fluid. Then after we count to five and we talk a little bit and you have some more tea, then you're going to push the brake gently and hold it till it's firm, and I'm going to do the same bleeder. Now, when you're doing the bleeders, I want you to do diagonal bleeders. So start at the right rear and then the left front. And then
okay.
go to the rear on that side and then go to the other side front. I want you to bounce back and forth. I don't want you to do any wheel more than two times in a row. And I also want you to just go diagonally. And once the fluid starts coming out, the motor's running, when it starts coming out and it's clean, you can stop. Now, my guys are going to do just the opposite. We're going to put the cord on there, and we're going to hook up a machine and suck that fluid out of each one of those four.
I actually have a vacuum bleeder.
Use that.
Well, and I know that for the four wheels. I'm actually replacing brake lines and rebuilding my front calipers.
Okay.
Not a big deal. Those jobs are easy, and I'm replacing the master cylinder.
Okay.
Not a great big deal. That part I know. I just know that this has somewhere in the back, and I'm not familiar enough with this flat platform to know where the ABS system is. Somewhere in the back there is ABS plumbing and all that stuff. I just was hoping to be able to clear that out, and I don't know if there's air in it.
Well, you'll find out soon enough, but just follow the lines from the master cylinder. You may have a device in the back that's going to modulate the pressure to the two rear wheels. But in reality, you follow the brake lines, because if you have four-wheel disc, then both reservoirs are the same size, and one of the lines is going to go to the front brakes and split from there. But the lines are going to go to the master cylinder ABS unit, and then from there, they're going to go back out to the wheels. You make sure that you mount your calipers with the bleeders to the north. That's a mistake that everybody makes. And
I am aware of that.
Okay. And if you have a vacuum pump, you should be just fine. It's just going to take a long time. That's all it's going to take. It's going to be lots of time, lots of brake fluid, but it'll be fine. All right. Good luck to you. Thank you for your comment about Thunderbird Auto. I appreciate that. Ben, you're up next. What can we do for you?
Just quick, because I know you're running tight on the clock. Fuel economy, 88... Chevy Class C Motorhome 350. I've already talked to quality. He says tranny can't do nothing. What about changing the rear end?
Well, what kind of fuel economy are you getting on it?
12 at the best on the flat going to Tucson.
And how long is it?
21.
And you're complaining about 12?
Well, I'm not talking about a come along like you got there.
I don't know, but still. Still, look at, you're driving a box down the road. If you wanted to change the differential, he should have told you that's an $800 to $1,200 gig. And
should have what?
$800 to $1,200.
Oh, that's what I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's ring and pinion, and then we're going to have to redo the drive and driven gears in the transmission to make your speedometer right. And then we're going to put a complete set of bearings in it and seals. So by the time we're all done, the only thing we haven't replaced is the spiders.
Okay.
So basically, it's an overhaul of the rear end. Here's what I would do if I were you, is air the tires up to their maximum inflation.
I believe so.
And what kind of oil are you using? And real quick, what's the weight?
Synthetic 1030.
Perfect.
Synthetic blend.
Perfect. Perfect. And can you get your wife to just shave half of the stuff she has in the motorhome out?
I know where you're going.
Yeah, you know, it's just, and you too. It's just, look at it, and if you haven't touched it in the last three motorhome trips, get it the heck out of there and just lighten up the load. But really and truly, at 12 miles an hour, a gallon, I know that there's diesel trucks out there that are running empty that don't get that. So,
I know.
And,
I'm worried.
But,
well,
yeah.
Tell my wife to get rid of the beer, and that'll help.
No, you're not going to. You're not taking me there with you, buddy.
Can you tell I'm an old fan?
Tell your wife I admire her for being with a guy like you, because you sound like a guy like me. Thank you very much, Ben. I appreciate it. Don, you're up next, buddy.
Hey, how are you, Mark?
Good.
You know that
Oh, did we lose him?
I think we lost him.
Yeah, okay. We did.
All right, if he calls back in, just tell me real quick. I'm going to tell you about automatic transmission exchange. I talk a lot about old guys with gray hair, okay? I went and had my dog got hurt, and the guy that did the surgery on here had gray hair. And I can't tell you, as I watched him check her anterior cruciate ligament.
ACL.
ACL. Yeah. She blew her ACL out. She's a year and a half Shepherd. And he manipulated her knee, and she tried to bite him, and he said she's torn her ACL. Then he turns around, and I say to him, I want you to check her other knee. I want to see what her other knee looks like compared to this one. And he goes, yeah. He says, I'll do that for you, but I don't need to do it. He says, I've shook too many knees. And I'm smiling at him, and he goes, you're testing me, aren't you? And I go, I am. And he goes, okay, that's okay. I'm okay with that. Thank you for testing me. So he says, look at this knee, then look at this knee. Can you see the difference? And I said, oh, I can see the difference. And I can also see the difference. She wants to bite you when you do this. But this knee over here has no play, and this knee over here has a half a mile of play. And he goes, yeah. Well, that's what Automatic Transmission Exchange has to offer. Those guys, Phil and his staff, have gray hair. They've been around the block. They're smart. They've been in business since 1968, and they know the difference between right and wrong. So when you go and you talk about rebuilding transmissions, whether it's the old Power Glides and the old 727s and the Dodges, all the way up to the new electronics, Phil and his staff are really good. Their trained technicians know exactly what makes a transmission work and how to make it better if that's what you want to do. And once your transmission is completed, if you need an overhaul, before it goes back into your car, they have a way to test its operation so they don't have to put it in the car to go drive it. Oh, we made a mistake and pull it back out. That's something most transmissions don't have. So if you live in Central Phoenix, anywhere, Automatic Transmission Exchange is located at 40th Street in Washington. And when you go by there, you'll say to yourself, I've seen that place for a very long time in the same place. Phil and his staff are really, really good, and I'm proud. He's one of four transmission shops that I recommend, and him and the other three are all great guys. But Phil's got a lot of gray hair. All righty, when we come, well, we're done. Until then, please drive safely, wear your seatbelt, don't drink and drive. Alan, thanks for spending your Saturday
with
me.
Have a great weekend.
And Mark at MarkSalem.com if I missed your question. Mark at MarkSalem.com.